What is the book of Deuteronomy? What is Sefer Dvarim? So it's the fifth book of the Torah. And it's a speech, and most of the speech, what Moshe does, he tells the entire story from beginning to the end, all over again. He does something else, he takes all the laws, and he repeats them all over again. Which is the reason why Chazal call it Mishneh Torah. It's just a second Torah. He's saying it all over again. Also, the Latin translation captures the fact that this is like the second law, the Deuteronomy. So why do you need the entire narrative to be said all over again? Now, anyone that studied in the yeshiva and the rabbinic world knows that repetition is important. That if you learn a text and you don't repeat it, it's as if you didn't learn it. Somewhere in the Talmud it says that if you study a text 100 times, study it 101 times. There isn't an end to the importance of repetition. So all this text, as it seems like, is like a yeshivish didactic move where you read the whole Torah, and in the last book, you repeat the Torah. The problem with that theory is that it's wrong. Because what really happens is if Moshe repeats the Torah, it's a different story. And this is an important part to understand. Because when you repeat something, you're already interpreting that something. Anyone that's listening or watching this lecture and later on would want to tell someone, a friend or friends, what this lecture was about, they might think that they're repeating it, but their attempt to repeat it, their attempt to say what it was about, is already their interpretation. So the book of Deuteronomy is the first interpretation of the Torah. There is something, this is important to think about. Deuteronomy was a book written or given by a person, by Moshe. This is not heresy to say that it was a book written by a human being. This is the understanding of Abaye, one of the greatest Talmudic scholars, and Rabbi Yitzchak Abar Ban'el, and many others, because it says, Ele hadvarim asher diber Moshe. These are the words of Moshe. Rabbeinu Chaim ben Attar says that from here you learn that the first four books of the Torah are divine, but the fifth book, a book of the Torah, is human. It's a human book. So here we have a structure. We have four divine books and one human book, and together it's the Torah. And the human book of the Torah is a repetition of the Torah, which is the interpretation of the Torah, which takes me to my first conclusion. And this is the following conclusion. Sefer Dvarim is the first interpretation of the Torah. Rabbi Tzadok HaKohen Milublin writes that the book of Deuteronomy is not only the last book of the Torah Shebichtav, it's the first book of the Torah Shebenpi. It's not only the last book of the written Torah, it's the first book of the oral Torah, which means the interpretation, the human reflection and interpretation of the Torah. So you have an event that happens in Exodus, and it's told all over again in Deuteronomy. You have the divine perspective, and you have the human interpretation. And together, they're the Torah. Deuteronomy doesn't have less value in the Torah than Exodus, and then Vayikra, and Bamidbar, than the other books. It has the same value, because the Torah is complete. It's complete because it has the divine voice and the human voice, and they're both sacred at the same exact level. So if we're starting to think about Deuteronomy as the last book of the Torah, but the first interpretation of the Torah, my question is, okay, what is the interpretation of Deuteronomy to the Torah? And we could discover that when we see what are the parts that Deuteronomy repeats, and what are the parts that he chooses not to repeat. So he repeats almost all the laws, but not all the laws. There are many laws that do not exist in the book of Dvarim. For example, almost all the korbanot, the sacrifices, are not in the book of Dvarim. Almost all the rituals of the mikdash, of the temple, or of the mishkan, of the tabernacle, are not present in the book of Dvarim. Some serious rituals, like the ketoret, incense, and hatavat hanerot, the lighting of the candles, are very sacred rituals. They're a main part of the ancient Jewish religion, and they're not a part of the Book of Devarim. Korban chatat, the sacrifice you offer when you sin, does not exist in Devarim. Korban olah barely exists in the Book of Devarim. An entire body of rituals is absent. So we have to ask, why are these rituals absent? Why doesn't he repeat them? And I think to understand why he doesn't repeat them, we have to listen to the most dominant motif of Sefer Devarim. The most dominant motif of Deuteronomy is the following idea. And it appears 20 times. He says, I'm going to tell you today all the chukim, all the mitzvot, all the commandments, all the laws, that when you enter the land of Israel, if you will obey them, you'll survive. And if you won't, you'll be destroyed and exiled. And he says that again and again and again. If you obey the laws I'll tell you today, you'll survive. And if you won't, you'll be destroyed and exiled. So first of all, imagine how weird it is. They're about to enter Israel. They're going to face a great war when they enter Israel to conquer Israel, but Moshe never, barely speaks to them about the challenges of entering Israel and conquering Israel. It's only about staying in Israel and not being exiled from Israel. Because according to Moshe, when it comes to the Hebrews, the big challenge is not entering to the land. The greatest challenge is, can they stay in the land? It seems like when it comes to Jews, it's easier to get to Israel. It's harder to stay there. That's the challenge that the book of Deuteronomy is addressing. How are they going to stay there? And if they will obey the laws, they'll stay. If they won't, they'll be exiled. And then he tells them the laws, and not all the laws are there. Most of the rituals in the Mikdash are not there. What do I learn from here? Something very simple. He's not canceling the laws. They're there. They're mentioned in parts of Shemot and Vayikra. They're there. But I guess what he's saying and what he's meaning is that he's going to say today only the laws, that obeying them is critical for their survival, for their thriving, for their success. And from the fact that he does not mention most of the korbanot, most of the sacrifices, I learned something extremely simple, but it's actually very radical. Moshe, in the book of Deuteronomy, doesn't think that the korbanot, that the sacrifice, are the critical part of the Torah. They're a part of the Torah. They need to obey them, but it's not the critical part of the Torah. It's not the strategic part of the Torah. It's not the part that if you violate it, you're out. And if you comply with it, if you obey it, you're in. And you could stay and succeed and thrive in Eretz Yisrael. So you see, the first interpretation for the Torah is the interpretation that creates a silent hierarchy within the Torah. A hierarchy between the critical mitzvot and the not critical mitzvot. Now, Moshe's move here is very subtle. He just doesn't mention the korbanot. He doesn't say they're not important. He just doesn't mention them. Later on, the prophets will tap into this intuition of Moshe and expand it. For example, Isaiah 1. What's going to be the big, great move of Isaiah? Isaiah will say that the way the Hebrews at the time of the first temple understand what's important and not important is completely distorted. God wants justice. He wants morality. He wants ethics. He's not interested in sacrifice. The prophet Hosea captures it in one line. Ki chesed chafatzti lo zevach. God wants grace, not sacrifice. So if people think that sacrifice is important, and God thinks that grace and compassion is important, so there is a gap between the theology of the people and the theology of God, what's important to the people and what's important to God, and that gap is at the heart of the prophetic critique of the Jewish people towards the end of the first temple, of Hosea, of Yeshayahu, of Yirmiyahu. But the founder of that move is Av HaNevi'im, is the father of all prophets, of Moshe, in a subtle way, just not mentioning sacrifice. In our last lecture, whoever heard or listened, so we saw how Moshe takes himself out of the past, trying to say, I'm not that important. Now we're saying that he's taking the sacrifice out of the laws. He's not reforming Judaism. He's not canceling sacrifice. He's just taking it out of the speech, where the speech where he says, I'm going to share with you today the critical parts of the Torah, and the subtext is, sacrifice is not the critical part of the Torah. But there is a sacrifice that he does mention. And not only that he mentions it in a repetitive way. And that is the different brands and forms of Korban Shlamim. What is Korban Shlamim? And it's interesting, it's the only Korban that he mentions. Shlamim are the different brands, also Chagiga and Simcha. It's what Chazal calls Kodashim Kalim. I won't go into all these details. But in very broad strokes, I wanted to a very brief introduction to the world of sacrifice. There's Korban called Ola, and there is Chatat, and there is Shlamim. There's others, but these are three important categories. Korban Ola is the Korban where all the parts of the animals are burnt on the altar. Metaphorically, symbolically, or not metaphorically and symbolically, depends what you believe, all the meat goes to God. It's all on the altar. Korban Chatat and also Korban Asham, these are korbanot, these are sacrifices, that part of the meat is burnt on the altar and part of the meat is eaten by the priests. Only Korban Shlamim is a korban that is eaten by who? By the people who offer it. And that is the only korban that is articulated in the book of Deuteronomy. Now, when you eat your own korban, the book of Deuteronomy expects you to share your sacrifice with other people. And then he says, with who? With the ger, the immigrant, the foreigner, the person that is a part of a political minority that is not protected. With the yatom, the orphan. With the almana, the widow. You're expected to share that sacrifice with the weakest parts of society. Now this idea, this motif, is repeated again and again. So isn't that interesting? That the book of Deuteronomy erases Chatat and Asham, and he mentions Shlamim, and there he repeats that you're supposed to take your sacrifice and share it with the immigrants and the orphans and the widows. This is an important twist in the book of Deuteronomy. The only sacrifice that he mentions is not the one that you completely share with God, but the one that you share with the weakest parts of society. This idea is an important transition that I'd like to see a part of the social transition of the book of Deuteronomy. And the social transition of the book of Deuteronomy we see not only by the way he reshapes the importance of ritual by focusing on the social aspects of the ritual and not the theological aspects of the ritual. We see this not only in the ritual in the temple, we see it also in the way the book of Deuteronomy reinterprets and reshapes the Shabbat. Shabbat, which, in other words, he doesn't only reshape the way we experience sacred space, the Mikdash, by emphasizing Shlamim and not other Korbanot, he also reshapes not only sacred space, but sacred time, the way we understand Shabbat. Now I'd like to go into the way he reshapes Shabbat. Shabbat appears, as many of you probably know, the Ten Commandments appear twice in the Torah. The first time in Shmot in Exodus chapter 20, and then the second time when Moshe repeats the Ten Commandments in Deuteronomy chapter 5. But the weird thing, and the interesting thing, is that even when he repeats the Ten Commandments, what comes out of his mouth is not an accurate repetition of the Ten Commandments. Even there, we find his interpretation of the Ten Commandments. And how does he understand the Ten Commandments? So first of all, just remind ourselves of what was the message of the Ten Commandments in the book of Exodus. The message of the Ten Commandments of the book of Exodus, of the mitzvah of Shabbat, is that we were commanded to imitate God. Now, God created the world 6 days, and then he rested the seventh day. Therefore, we are commanded to live creative lives 6 days, and then not to create anything, let things be, to rest the seventh day. Shabbat is not the name of a day, it's the name of a week. And observing Sabbath means living a creative life 6 days, imitating God that created everything. This is Salavagic. And then one day, letting everything be, letting go, resting, not creating. So Shabbat lifts that. Not only Shabbat is not only resting like God rested, it's also working and being productive and creative like God was creative. So if the book of Genesis presents the first week in history, 6 days of creation, one day of rest, we're commanded every week in history to relive the first week of history. So that's, I think, very basic understanding of the Shabbat of the book of Exodus. Imitatio Dei, imitating God in creativity 6 days and rest one day. How does the book of Deuteronomy understand Shabbat? Very differently. So I would like just to read very briefly the important twist in Deuteronomy. This is Deuteronomy 5. Shamor et yom ha-shabbat lekadsho. In Exodus it says, Zachor et yom ha-shabbat lekadsho, kasher tivcha Adonai Elohecha. Sheshet yamim ta'avod, 6 days you shall work. Va'asita kol melachtecha. The term melacha appears also in creation. The rabbis understood it as doing something creative to change the world. I think that's the original understanding of it with melacha. 6 days you did melacha, you were creative. Ve'yom shvi'i shabbat la'adonai Elohecha. Lo ta'ase ko melacha ata uvitcha, ata uvincha, uvitecha, ve'avdecha, ve'amatecha, ve'shorcha, ve'chamocha, ve'chol be'emtecha, ve'gircha asher b'she'arecha, le'ma'an yanuach avdecha ve'amatcha kamocha. This is the important line that is missing in Exodus. Leman yanuach avdecha ve'amatcha kamocha. So your slave and your female slave will rest just like you're resting. Leman yanuach avdecha ve'amatcha kamocha. Kamocha is a powerful word in the Torah, in the Bible. It means just like you. Kamocha. Now I would like to ask a question. In the Shabbat of Deuteronomy, who is the Metsuveh? Who is the Metsuveh? Who is the person that this commandment is directed at? Leman yanuach avdecha ve'amatcha kamocha. So your slave and your female slave should rest just like you're resting. So who is the imaginary person that is commanded in this commandment? I think it's not the slaves. It's the person who has slaves. It's directed at the master. And that's the mitzvah, that's the person that's commanded. And from that I want to derive, what is the commandment? The commandment is not to rest. That's Exodus. The commandment is to let your slaves rest. Lo lanuach, lehaniach. Not to rest, to let rest. So we have a different commandment of Shabbat in Deuteronomy. It's to enable rest. And if we think about this just a little bit more, so in Deuteronomy, in Exodus, there is imitatio Dei, you're trying to be like God that's above everything. Here there is a different form of trying to be like, of imitation. But it's leman yanuach avdecha ve'amatcha kamocha. It's so your slaves will be just like you. In Exodus, you're trying to be like God. In Deuteronomy, is your slaves being like you. It's the collapse of all social hierarchy. The Shabbat of Deuteronomy is creates a system where there's 6 days of hierarchy and one day where hierarchy collapses. 6 days of hierarchy, one day where hierarchy collapses. You see, Karl Marx thought that through labor, we could achieve equality. Moshe Rabbeinu thought it's not about through working we achieve equality. It's through resting that we achieve equality. Shabbat is the democratization of the privilege that's called rest. When we work, there could be hierarchy, but we don't work the same, but we rest the same. That's the radical innovation of Shabbat, the democratization of the privilege called resting, which takes me to dig deeper into what is Shabbat about. It's not about resting. It's about something else. You're not allowed to have a slave on Shabbat. Shabbat is not about resting. It's about not controlling. 6 days of control, one day of losing control. It's about letting go of your control. This idea is an idea we're going to go back to in one of our future lectures. But for now, I want to notice how he reshapes Shabbat. In a very similar way that he reshaped the Mikdash, the temple. When he discusses the sacrifice of the temple, he doesn't mention Chatat or Olah. He doesn't mention all the sacrifices that are about metaphorically feeding God. Only the sacrifice about feeding the weak. In Shabbat, it's not about imitating God. It's about being just like the weak. Leman yanuach avdecha ve'amatcha kamocha. The book of Deuteronomy takes the theological moves of Shmot and Vayikra and turns them into social moves. And reshaping sacred space, reshaping sacred time, trying to say their highest religious moments in Shabbat is where we let our slaves rest, and in the Mikdash is when we let the weakest parts of society have a part of our food. We're eating, and if in the temple we eat with the weakest, in Shabbat we rest with the weakest, those are two moments where hierarchy collapses. So in the first interpretation of the Torah, this human interpretation of Torah also emphasizes, in a deep sense, humanity itself. Finally, and I hope I've managed to establish these three things, that the book of Deuteronomy is the first interpretation of the Torah, and he reinterprets ritual, and he reinterprets Shabbat, and he reshapes space, and reshapes time, and makes a move toward from the theological towards the social. Finally, I want to notice one last thing. The Torah is not only about laws, it's also about narratives. And when we look at the Torah until the book of Deuteronomy, it's very obvious that the heart of the narrative is the tabernacle. It's actually not even the tabernacle. It's the ark. It's the sacred ark. In Exodus, the ark is a very big deal. And there's very clear instructions of how you build the ark. And then how you build everything that's around the ark, the tabernacle. And what you put in the ark. And who carries the ark. And then there is a massive part of the narrative is how they build the ark and the tabernacle. A person called Bezalel ben Uri has to build the ark. And then there is a motion, there is a notion of how of collecting all the gifts to build the tabernacle. And then in the book of Leviticus, there's about the moment where they finally build the tabernacle, and there is a great ceremony celebrating the fact that they built the tabernacle. It's going to start working now. And that ceremony, so Nadav and Avihu make the wrong move and they die. And then in the book of Numbers, described how this tabernacle is the center of the camp of Israel, and how all the tribes are organized around the tabernacle. What I'm trying to say, it's a very, I'm going to make up a word now, a tabernacle-centered text. Leviticus and Exodus and Numbers. There is much more, greater investment in the stories around the tabernacle than there is around the entire story of Yetziat Mitzrayim, of Exodus. It's about a book and a half, the stories surrounding the tabernacle. That's a big part of the narrative. Now, Moshe in Deuteronomy has to repeat the narrative. He has to tell the whole story all over again. And how does he tell, the story of the tabernacle all over again? So this appears in Deuteronomy chapter 10. This is what he says. Ba'et ahi amar Adonai elai, psal lecha shnei luchot avanim, karishonim, va'ale elai ahara, ve'asit alecha aron etz. That's it. Where's the Zahav, Kesef, Nechoshet? Where's Bitzalel? Where's Nadav? Where's Avihu? Where's a whole book and a half of drama around the creation of the tabernacle? All we have is three words. Asita lecha, four words. Asita lecha aron etz. Can you please build a ark so I could put the tablets in them? That's it. What I'm saying is that and when he repeats the Torah, he doesn't only not repeat the law, most of the laws of sacrifice, he also erases almost all the narrative of the tabernacle and shrinks it into Va'asita lecha aron etz, and you should build an ark of wood. That's extremely changing the past. That is creating a new Jewish emphasis, a Judaism that doesn't create a strong emphasis on the ark and the tabernacle. This is an idea I'm going to elaborate more in our next lectures. But I want to end with the way Jeremiah understood the future, the prophet Jeremiah. It's my understanding that the best way to read the Tanakh is that the Tanakh, the Bible, is the best interpretation of the Bible. And in this lecture series, we're not going to use modern scholars, and we're not going to use rabbinic scholars to understand the Bible. We're going to try to use the Bible to understand the Bible. And one of the greatest prophets which really continued the theology of Deuteronomy was Jeremiah. I want to notice how Jeremiah understands the future, the positive future, I would almost even say redemption in the eyes of Jeremiah. And I'm going to be reading here from Jeremiah chapter 3, verse 16. Before I read this, just some context. I'm sure most of the people that are listening to us and watching this today, or whenever they're watching us, know that the ark is missing. That sometime, some moment in time, the ark disappeared. We don't even know when. Which we know that when it's described, all the vessels, all the sacred vessels that were taken to Babylon in the exile, there is a list and the ark is not in the list. So probably disappeared beforehand, no one knows where, when. And there is a great ancient Jewish fantasy to find the missing ark. To find the ark. And as you know, there are movies and stories done about this mysterious ark. Where is the ark? Well, here's the way Jeremiah understands. And redemption probably will come when we'll find the ark, when the missing ark will reappear. That is redemption. We need the ark. Well, this is how Jeremiah understands it. Jeremiah chapter 3, verse 16. V'haya ki tirbu ufritem ba'aretz bayamim ahema ne'um Adonai. You'll be fruitful in the land of Israel in the days that will come. Lo yomru od aron brit Adonai, velo ya'ale al lev, velo yizkeru bo, velo yifkedu, velo ya'ase od. In the end of days, in the times of redemption, people will not ask, where is the ark? Lo ya'ale al lev, lo yizkeru bo, lo yifkedu, velo ya'ase od. The ark will not only leave geography, it won't only leave their space, He'll also leave the mind of the people. They won't have fantasies about the ark. They won't be craving for the ark. The ark will disappear from people's awareness. It would be a Judaism that's not based on the ark. Isn't that interesting? According to Yechizkel, redemption comes with the ark. According to Jeremiah, redemption comes when we are not dependent spiritually on the ark anymore. Because Yirmiyahu is the prophet that amplifies the ideas of Moshe of Deuteronomy. And here's how it works. Moshe tried to take the ark out of our past. Jeremiah is taking the ark out of the future. Moshe minimizes the role of the ark in the past, and Jeremiah sees a future with no ark or with no central role for the ark. A big idea that we're going to have to discuss in this lecture series is that it seems like Moshe is creating a different Judaism. Sacrifice that his emphasis is on the weak and not on God, a Shabbat that is about equality and not about resting, but letting others rest. A narrative that the ark wasn't dominant in the past, and Jeremiah picks that up and takes the ark out of the future. And here's something that might be troubling for some of us. This is very different Judaism than the Judaism of Leviticus. In Leviticus, the ark is central. In Leviticus, sacrifice is central. Ezekiel is to Leviticus what Jeremiah is to Deuteronomy. And in Ezekiel, in the future, sacrifices are important. And the ark is important. What might be troubling, it sounds like that within the Bible, we have two Judaisms. The Judaism of Leviticus and Judaism of Deuteronomy. And that is an idea that I'm going to try to explore a little bit more in our next lectures. A very important change, a very important interpretation, a very important revolution, you might say, that we find in the book of Deuteronomy, is the idea that God is not present in the temple, He's not present in the tabernacle.